Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Youth Unplugged, brought to you by the Bank of St. Lucia. It's a new year and it's a new season of Youth Unplugged. We're inside season number 2. Our entire year passed already, you know, doing this thing here. This afternoon I'm joined with none other than Alberta Ruchilo. I find it so weird saying Alberta because I've only ever known you as Twinkle. In the sense, so when I say Alberta, this it doesn't just roll off the tongue. It's something that I have to, you know, try to see. And it's a good afternoon, Twinkle. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. You know, feeling okay. You understand?
New year, new show,
new settings, new everything. You know, how was Christmas?
Christmas was good. I can't complain. I didn't eat as much as I wanted to, but here I am, and
not as
I'm
much
happy
as you
to
wanted
make it into
to.
The new year.
So is that something that you're trying to be a little more weight conscious this year?
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
I'm trying my best.
I think I overdid it a little bit.
You did?
Yeah, I think I ate a little bit too much cake. So that's, I have a weakness for cake.
I love fruit cake as well.
Yeah, I had a little weakness. That not too much pork on these things, but the fruit cake. That
was I'm a vegetarian, so I don't really eat.
Oh, okay. You see, I'm learning things about you. That's what you from Plug all about.
Well,
you
it's
know?
True, yeah.
Yeah, in the first segment, we have to talk about you, Miss Ruchilo. Miss Alberta Ruchilo. It still doesn't sound right. You understand? But good afternoon, Alberta. So this is Youth Unplugged. And of course, in the first section, we talk about who you are, etc. So Twinkle, you had to help me out. You had to tell me exactly where did it all start for you?
When you say where did it all start, what do you mean?
Okay. You know, let's say education-wise. Where did it start for you?
So as a child, I attended the Kids Care Preschool, which is in Groseley. And I then went to Tapio School, then went to the St. Joseph's Convent, A-Level College, University of the West Indies. I'm a proud alumni, I would say, of the University of the West Indies.
Pelican Pride.
Yes, Pelican Pride. I also went to the University of Law and BPP University in England. And here I am today.
Okay. Well, we had to make some stops. Because I know along the way, you know, for example, let's talk about convent. Convent would have been a big thing for, you know, girls always, when they leave convent, they would say long live the white and blue.
The white and blue. We are very proud of our white and blue, indeed.
They make a big deal out of, you know, convent girls have more pride than anybody else.
We are very
more
proud.
More than us college boys, you know, we try to be, you know, step together, play the game and that. The girls matching us up.
Yeah, it becomes part of our blood once we enter the St. Joseph's Convent. I mean, it's when you enter the St. Joseph's Convent, it's almost a critical part of you because you enter as a child and you leave almost as an adult. And there are a lot of things that have been ingrained in us, and I would say myself as well, which has made me very proud, I would say. And interestingly enough, I did not even study anything in relation to the arts at the convent. I actually studied the sciences. Initially, my intention was to be either a doctor, more specifically a pediatrician, or become an actuary. And then along the way, something changed.
Okay, help me out. What's an actuary?
So an actuary is more or less like they involve in statistics. So they more or less, they're sort of like a statistician. Sometimes I have difficulty saying that word. But they, more or less, they do statistics, and they do it for insurance companies to determine like what risks they should take and how much the premium should be and whatnot. So more or less, they analyze data.
Okay. I know. There's a risk consultancy thing that people study. Say that Santa Cassie. What's the name of this thing again? It's not coming now. But it's actuarial science.
It's the same thing. Okay. Correct. Well, right. From my knowledge, at least. Yeah. I may be mistaken.
I heard that program is quite hard. You know,
yeah,
you know,
it's quite difficult. But
applied for that and didn't finish because it was...
Yes, it really was. From what I understand, I should say.
Okay.
And then I went to the A-level college where I did biochem and math.
Still, after leaving convent, you still realize at that point that...
No, I was a little confused. I really wanted to study medicine. It was after A-level that I made the decision to go to University of the West Indies and study economics and law.
Okay. Now, I think the last time I had somebody here who actually did law or is a lawyer now, she said that she didn't have to do anything in relation to law, because at the Sir Arthur Lewis, they actually offer law as a subject. And
When I was at the Sir Arthur Lewis Community College, law wasn't offered.
Oh, well, strides, eh?
It yes, is, most people were doing like history, literature, and that sort of thing.
For them to get that admittance into.
Yes.
And she told me that you didn't have to do law at Sir Arthur or anything of the sort to get into. And I was so surprised. And over and over now, it's like a reoccurring thing. When I got back to this school, I actually told some students, like, you know, you don't need to be doing law.
Yeah, you don't.
You know, because I get a little information. So I share the information now because I didn't know that. You understand? I thought that you had to have some sort of knowledge or prior knowledge before entering the LLB program at Cavill, et cetera, and so forth. So from Sir Arthur completing Cambridge, I could understand Cambridge biology, chemistry, very difficult subjects, by the way. And going on to the University of the West Indies, where you did a degree in law and economics. Now, Cavill itself is an experience. Eh? And I don't know what that experience was like for you. So well, can you share some light on that?
I would probably say those were probably, well, thus far been the best years of my life. Barbados was indeed a very good experience. And I would say I really matured and learned how to grow up during those 3 years, well, 4 years rather, because I spent 4 years because I did my part of my master's at Cavill as well.
Oh, wow.
But it was very interesting to mix the two, because I remember clearly when I decided to do both law and economics, I went into one of the dean's offices and I told him, you know, it's really my intention to do law and economics. And he's like, well, most people who do that fail. So I wish you all the best, but if I'm very honest, I don't see you getting very far with that degree. And I had spoken to a few people who had done the degree as well, and they themselves told me, some of them had switched and decided that they would not continue. However, there were three people in my year who I knew who were doing law and economics as well, and we really stayed together, and in the end, all three of us ended up getting our degree in law and economics.
Okay, well, that's wonderful, because the natural blend, I think now at Cavill, at least when I went to Cavill, was law and political science.
Correct.
A lot of people who do the law and political science. And for those of you who are probably interested in going out to university and probably can't afford to go into law school at Cavill, because it's actually quite expensive if you go to do the LLB itself, you could do law and political science for 3 years. You could get that under scholarship, correct, as a matter of fact, and then go on to just complete, I think, 1 year.
It's 2 years. You go in as a direct entry student.
And then
you do 2 years.
And it's not as long as actually going.
No.
And you end up coming out with probably two LLB and a BSc or whatever.
Correct.
It is that. So you see options.
Yes.
I remember something. I actually remember something. Yes. So again, the natural thing at the time would be law and political science. A lot of people have gone out and did that program, then moving on to UWood and that sort of thing. But
yes,
reading your bio, I realized that you didn't go that route. So.
No. Economics was all, I was quite good at math, I would say. So economics was always something that really kept me interested. I always felt like it was a subject that there wasn't enough emphasis placed on. And I also felt like, I'm a St. Lucian and we have a Nobel laureate from St. Lucia who got his Nobel Prize in economics, so why not? I think doing my degree in economics and law, it really allowed me to see the world from the view of legal practitioners and from the view of economists. And it was really enlightening, I would say, and it really widened my view of how things operate. And I mean, I'm very happy that I did it because I can fully understand both economic policy as well as, you know, things that are spoken about in the legislature, things that are spoken about in relation to government policy and whatnot. And okay. I can marry the two. So I don't regret it at all. I think it was a fantastic choice.
And you're well married too, because you went on to do your master's in trade policy, which has a little bit of both.
Yes, actually, right? We had to do courses both in economics and law. Interestingly enough, so I indeed married the two. And trade policy doesn't put it only on a national level, but an international level, understanding goods and services across borders. I think it was a very interesting program at the time, and I was very interested in doing it, mainly because the person who was in charge at the time, Mr. Neil Paul, he is a St. Lucian, and he was very much an inspiration to me. And because of that, I felt very inspired. And we also got the opportunity, of course, to go to the World Trade Organization, get hands-on experience in Geneva and whatnot. So it was really a good program. And it really allowed me to see how policy really affects us in the Caribbean and in St. Lucia in particular.
Well, that really broadened the horizon, isn't it? Geneva and all these kinds.
It's true.
But of course, we got to talk about the transition, because after leaving Cayville, you know, small island people, we go to a school where we have a little party every weekend. You understand? You're enjoying yourself. Cayville is quite the place to be. Again, I'll tell people, that's the best UWE campus to go to.
Arguably,
absolutely not. I mean, I've gone to St. Augustine in Trinidad. I spent some time there. I spent some time at Cayville as well. And St. Lucian's normally just shelling it down at Cayville. Well, in my discipline, for example, in chemistry, you have probably five of the last six top performers in the school coming from St. Lucia.
Correct.
So we have, and I think we're on course to actually getting that award again this year, because there's a very brilliant young chemist at Cayville. So St. Lucian's, Cayville is the place to go. Eh? Don't let anybody fool you. Go to Cayville, apply for the Alpha Lewis Award. That's a great award, a nice economic award that you could get to go into school. This is what Youth Unplug is all about. But you, Ms. Richelieu, that trade policy degree, do you see yourself using it as much as you want to these days?
So, as I was telling you earlier, before we started this program, I find myself not using it as much. But where I find myself using it in a sense, is when I listen to what's going on, like listening to the news, understanding the stock market, and even to a certain extent, bitcoins and whatnot. These things are really trade policies. How is trade policy going to affect us moving forward in terms of technology and whatnot? Because we're really seeing the infiltration of technology to allow for the facilitation of goods and services. So all these things, I think, have me thinking about trade policy, not just in terms of goods, but in terms of services, because St. Lucia really, more or less, is really a services-based sort of economy. Mm-hmm. So using it, I mean, in the strict sense, not exactly, but in everyday life, I see it coming
to me.
Help
you reflect, etc.
Correct, yes.
Well, we do for a quick commercial break. I mean, I like to give thanks to my sponsor. Banco St. Lucia was here with me the entire year last year, so 2023 with Banco St. Lucia again. So thank you so much to the Banco St. Lucia. We're going for a quick commercial. We're going to come back inside a little bit more on Twinkle.
Sometimes you know where you want to go, but may not know how to get there. Your vision, your future, your life. Bank of St. Lucia provided me the advice that supported my goals at every stage of my life, my business, my retirement, and what I leave for those most important to me. We may not all have the same goals, but we all need to plan for them. BOSL Wise. Plan, invest, enjoy.
I never truly understood the meaning of owning a home until I owned one myself. A home. It's my space. Sitting in my own living room. Walls in my favorite color. Having tea on my couch. My soul knows that this is home. And every time I walk through the hallways, I am overcome with a feeling of achievement and joy. A peace of mind, knowing that I made the right choice.
Home Sweet Home by Bank of St. Lucia. Start your home journey with us.
Back inside on Youth Unplugged, for sure for the year, and my wonderful guest here with me, Miss Alberta Twinkle Richelieu. We're going to be talking a little bit more in depth about Alberta's passions and what really has her going. Speaking of passion, I remember you in the choir. You understand? That's my first
Cathedral Junior Choir.
Choir which I am actually a part of now.
Sort of part of.
You know, I don't sing every Sunday, but when I do come to Mass, I try to make the voice stretch as much as possible. These are some of the places that I think you develop a lot of social skills, conflict resolution, amongst other things. Did your time at Cathedral Junior Choir help shape you to the person you are today?
Of course. The Cathedral Junior Choir basically formed me into the person that I am today. I mean, Auntie Debbie. Miss Deborah Bushell, who never wants to be mentioned,
never. But
who continues to do fantastic work in terms of the youth. I mean, Auntie Debbie was really a cornerstone for me sometimes when your family would not be available. And I think it's so important that we have, you know, so many youth groups taking, being a fundamental part of most young people's lives. And I notice now, which is a bit disheartening, that there are not many youth groups that are very active. And
not
when
at
I
all.
Think about the work that Auntie Debbie did with the Cathedral Junior Choir, and even today, some of my friends laugh at me telling me, you know, I know all the songs at church and whatnot, but I mean, it's really become a fundamental part of who I am. And I think it's really helped me, like you said, with conflict resolution. But not just conflict resolution. I mean, even in terms of reading in church, being a lector, being an animator, these things helped me with public speaking. And I mean, at the
time... Another huge part of your...
A huge part, yes. And these things really helped me because when I originally joined the choir, I was very... I was a bit shy. I mean, I was never a super shy person. I was always a bit quite bold enough. But going up on the pulpit was never a thing that I would have done. But, you know, we were always encouraged to go, you know, form part of the... When we would be in the choir, we would sing the psalms on our own. We would be animators, lectors. And these things really became a part of who I am and really developed my skills without me even noticing. So, you know, youth groups really need to be a little more active because when I think about it, and even in retrospect, the Cathedral Junior Choir really contributed a significant part of my life, especially during my teenage years.
Okay, of course, it's a place for you to go as well. Sometimes your mother have nowhere to say. You know, when my mother sent me, and when my mother sent me to quadrille, right? She sent me to dance. Yeah, I was telling someone.
Part of quadrille.
She sent me to dance quadrille as part of Helen Folk Dancers. So, while of course, part of the choir as well. People,
yes.
Yeah, you had to send you somewhere on a Saturday.
Yes,
and I didn't want to go to football. Reflects today, but you know, these are the places that you ought to send the kids. And we still have Bible study on a Friday. We try to do as much as we can there.
Oh, you all still do it?
We still do it.
Because we had started...
I think it was you, people like you
when
who started,
When I was at Convent, I started with Zena.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to do it every Friday, and we used to do it at the Parish Center, where everybody would come. It was more or less like
a social gathering.
A social gathering, a double lime mm-hmm. on Fridays, and it was really good. And I really hope these things at least continue, at least for now.
Yeah, we went in. I mean, COVID gave us a little bit of a lash, so we had to start doing things online. And then mm-hmm. we eventually moved away from it and started meeting again and all that stuff. We actually give soup once a month. So if somebody wants to help and give us a little donation for our soup, we're taking it, you know.
Oh, yes,
we give soup and bread once a month outside the cathedral Paris Center. So
yes,
so I'm asking. But apart from that, you also have your own, what should I say, a bit of philanthropy.
I like to give back.
You like to give back. And even around the Christmas time, you had a little something going on to, you know, to give a little good turn. And I think some of these things are good to highlight as well.
Yes, I think when you are given much, you should give back. During the Christmas season, we did try to assist. My passion is women, so assist some young women during the Christmas season to get the necessaries and see how it is we can help them moving forward. I mean, giving back has always been part of who I am, I would say. Well, not who I am, but who I've become. And, you know, I've also been part of Raise Your Voice in Usha Inc., for which I'm in charge of women's empowerment and training.
Okay.
And if anybody wants to assist in any way, you can always send me an email.
No, we take it. Of course.
But yes, I think there's a need really for the empowerment of women in St. Lucia. I mean, we're quite empowered, I would say, compared to other countries. And not just women empowerment, but youth empowerment, because in that way we would transcend to a better society. And each and every one of us being better individuals moving forward.
Of course, I think you also had a little part to do with Girlfriend's Corner?
Oh, yes. Girlfriend's Corner was actually started by Sheila McIntyre. She actually started it. We no longer have it, but it really started with a boom where we would have, it was during the COVID pandemic period, where we would discuss like some serious issues, health, mental health, you know, financial management and that sort of thing. Very good experience. But I learned a lot and transferred some of my skills to Raise Your Voice in Usha.
Okay. Now, you made mention to the fact that, of course, there's a lot where you see women's rights and these sort of things. I mean, you see things like Helen's Daughters doing fantastic work
all around the place.
I mean, last year I actually passed by the little market, the little thing
over there.
And you see the people coming in, you know, the little thing and so forth. And I think it's really interesting to see. You see that the statistic that runs the past 10 to 15 years saying that St. Lucia has the most women in managerial positions,
yes,
full capital,
leadership
positions around the world.
Yes, we actually do. But you see, the thing is, the question is, yes, we have women in leadership positions, but there's still a lot of women who, you know, suffer under the hands of sometimes a male figure and whatnot. And these are things that we have to address, because women are a fundamental part of any economy or society, because they're the ones who bear children. And more often than not, especially in the West Indian society, women are the ones who bear the brunt of the family burden.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really important that we give them some form of financial, mental, whatever support as necessary. But yeah, it really is my passion. But it really contributes to sustainable development as well.
And I was about to get into that, because was it last year or the year before? The OECS had this thing.
Oh, the global.
The global SDM movement. And I remember seeing your face on that thing. Well, James Wavemaker and some other people.
Oh, yes. James was part of it. Louise Victor. And I can't remember her name now. But yes, we were part of it. We were SDM ambassadors. It was really more or less like a conference where they would speak about like different issues and how it is we can promote sustainable development. And the various ambassadors, we were in charge of promoting that conference and the various conferences leading up to that. Very good experience, learning to deal with people, learning to network. There were some very good people that we met, other ambassadors who were in, you know, like the tech industry and whatnot, who are making waves now. So it was a very good experience, I would say. James really supported me throughout that. James and I, we did both our sessions together where we discussed the future of work and looking at the economy moving forward.
You were looking at things like shorter work days and work weeks and that's
well, part of it. And we were also discussing how it is that we see work moving forward. And I mean, even prior to COVID, I remember reading a book called The Future of Work, a book that I got in Washington, D.C. And I was like, you know what, this wouldn't take, probably this will happen in the next 10 years. And interestingly enough, it happened within a year after COVID, where we saw that people realized that, hey, you don't have to come into work for you to actually do work. And, you know, you can have Zoom meetings and whatnot, which was what we were calling for a long time ago, but we finally saw it come to fruition.
Of course, all the time you see things like, why are, for example, I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but why are certain world figures traveling to go to meetings when these things pollute the environment so much more than literally calling somebody over Zoom? Why do we have to have physical conferences? Why do we have to do this and that? And I think sometimes people get caught up with not necessarily the sustainable development movement, but I think there's also importance in not only doing everything virtually, but there's some connection that you cannot get over the phone or over the web. Sometimes you need to meet people, because I can't imagine myself doing Youth Unplugged virtually all the time. I actually don't like to do it virtually. Sometimes I call somebody from like, but you know, I really feel the vibe.
You
in front of me right now, I could feel all the energy. You're having a conversation and the conversation is moving. I mean, very well, when you have about 3 minutes less to think of it. But
I told you.
I mean, you know, it's different, you understand? But not saying that we don't have to prioritize sustainable development and different aspects, not necessarily just only the environment, but we have to speak about women's rights, we have to speak about gender equality,
and
all
climate
these
change.
Climate change. All these things are part of sustainable development. It's not just one thing. People, you could go and check out the sustainable development goals, you know, it's online.
Yeah.
You understand? There are a lot of things going on, a lot of things that I think we need to pay attention to.
Yes.
With regards to trade policy and sustainable development, Twinkle, there's a lot I want to see done. You understand? You see how we're getting all that sarcasm there? That's our fault, you know. That's some people's fault that we're getting it, you understand? People calling for reparations, all different. We need to get some sort of financial assistance, you know, from the bigger countries for that, because that is not our fault. And I passing down Prale and Savans Bay and all this business, and you know, it's there, and it's a part of our environment now, and we have to deal with these things some way.
Yeah, there's no lie that we'll be disproportionately affected by climate change, and even women even more so. And because of that...
How so? I think I need to ask that. How so?
How so? Mm-hmm. So, remember, women bear majority of the brunt of family mm-hmm. affairs, right? That will mean with climate change, there'll be increased costs. We'll have the general temperature will increase, right? Mm-hmm. Which will mean that there will be increased costs. Women, to a certain extent, because they would have to take care of the family, you'll find more women staying home needing to take care of the family, or women probably working for less. And even with technology and climate change both happening together mm-hmm. and simultaneously, what we would be seeing is that women normally, we're normally part of the lower end jobs, and we know technology will really eliminate those lower end jobs as well. Mm-hmm. So with that and with climate change, women will be more or less left behind unless it is that a lot is done to ensure that, you know, we are not disproportionately affected.
And we ain't get to
and
that
even
point.
More so, we're in a small island developing state.
Yeah. We have to make mention to that. Yes, IDS is very much there. That is what I'm trying to say. We need that assistance.
Assistance, but I also have a unique opinion where I feel like we really need to move away from the need for constant financial assistance, because we've created this thing among ourselves where we feel like we always supposed to be helped, like almost like we're children. Mm-hmm. And I think the Caribbean needs to move away from that, and we need to start really thinking about creating our own. Because financial assistance makes us dependent on other people. If we start thinking about it independently and saying, okay, what can we do? How about we start pushing the manufacturing industry, pushing maybe agriculture and that sort of thing, then maybe we can take care of ourselves. But, you know, always constantly looking for financial assistance, I'm not sure how much in favor I am of that.
Of that, okay. Well, we're actually now 30 minutes past the hour.
See?
Is there anything that I did not touch on that you wish to elaborate on?
The only thing is that I would say, I mean, Youth Unplugged is all about youth. And I know there might be people listening to this program who may feel like, you know, they want to get somewhere, but there's nothing they can do at this point in time. And I just want to speak to anybody who feels that way to let them know that at the end of the day, there are a lot of people making it in this world. And more often than not, as small island developing states, and even as people of citizens of small countries, we feel like we cannot do better.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've had a Sir Arthur Lewis, we've had a Derek Walcott. Same way, we can have a lot of people who are great coming out of this small island. So I really wish you all the best and all the young people listening to the show. And thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much, Dinka. I mean, again, my first show for the year, Inside Season 2, I think I had a wonderful year last year. And I think it was good that I started with you this year.
Thank you.
You understand? I think that will really set the tone for next week.
Well, I really hope it does.
Yeah, of course. I'll call you to let you know how it's going. But I mean, thank you so much for joining us today.
Most welcome.
People, this has been the first edition of Youth Unplugged for the year 2023, brought to you by the Bank of St. Lucia. My name is Khaled Vidal. I will see you all again next week.